This is KWAI, Honolulu, 1080 on the AM dial.
We're all about now. I need a girl that can explore. I need a girl that's a little bit more open-minded. Ready to take on the world. So take a hint from Mr. Lover. Alongside the crowd. Do it.
I give scotch, you look sexy. I'd steal a touch if you let me. I'm just down to kick it with you, girl. Hey, boo, show me you're ready. Let's look in juicy like cherry. I can almost taste your flavor, girl.
But it seems like you're the wrong type. Don't you ever get upset. Girl, I like to see you sweat. It just feels like you're too uptight. Girl, you're too conservative. And that ain't how I wanna live. I want a freaky girl. Somebody just like me. Someone who understands just what a player needs.
Can you get freaky? How far would you go to please me? Whips and chains, girl, are you down with that? Strange place, searching for pleasure. I want you to meet me wherever. We're in just an overcoat and hat.
Or was I right? You're the wrong type. You don't ever get upset. I ain't never seen you sweat. It just feels like
show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now, here's Carol.
And good morning. Welcome to the Carol Cox Show. Another beautiful day here. As always, love this place. And we're going to try to keep it that way. And it's always a challenge, but you, me, and the tree will make a difference. Anyway, there's many things I want to talk about. I was going to talk about the Ethics Commission, and I'm still putting something together, more information on DLNR. It doesn't seem like we have any policemen in this town to police the police. It's become clear now. And so decisions are made. They're judgment calls. We have policies and general ideas if we were to prosecute or take action against an employee or employees within the state government, city government, federal government, if they are violating the law. It just depends on who you are and who you really whose toes you've stepped on. But if you're in the clique or if there's a political climate, you know, then you'll be protected. But we will be sharing with you some even bigger stories. I'll call them bigger stories. We don't tell stories here. We put the facts together. And understand my predicament. It's difficult to go out and, first of all, as a citizen taxpayer, to watch this unfold and see government as corrupted and what have you, and just lack of concern and good governance. And then you're dumb enough as, I'll use the term, I'm joking when I, you know, deride myself, to be dumb enough to go out there and pick up the pieces and run back to the state agencies or the federal agencies or the city agencies and say, look, they broke it. And generally, these agencies already know that it's broken. And you have to then give it to them, relinquish it all to them, and they then get the opportunity to sit on it, cover it up, and do nothing like we see. So it's not frustrating. It's more of a, well, it frustrates them because it makes the state agencies have to at least think how to get out of the box. And I'm going to read you something here. This was in the Hawaii Reporter, December 18th, 2014. And it's a quote from Laura Thielen, now Senator Laura Thielen, I should say, former Planning Commissioner once and also DLNR Chairman. And you remember she had the Renaissance, recreational Renaissance, where we saw fees and things of that being talked about, and the fishermen and the boaters were upset. And quite naturally, when you spring a cost on someone, it triggers a response in the people. What do you mean going to charge us? Well, we all have to agree that nothing is free, and taxes sometimes does not do what you need to supplement that through grants and fees or user fees. But I'm going to read you this, and this will set the tone, basically, of what the body of what I'll be talking about. Quote, power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely, end quote, explained Senator Thielen, quoting the historian and moralist Lord Acton. Now, having said that, let's go back to the Department of Land and Natural Resources, and we'll start with these basic facts. We know that the governor is inclined to, Governor Ige, is inclined to follow suit. Basically, I don't think anything has changed. In fact, I think we made a smarter fox in this guy called Ige. He was able to watch Neil Abercrombie and take lessons as to see where he needed to improve upon and touch upon. And I think what you have here, a more cagier, more insulated, more arrogant, cavalier group of people now, because you see, they saw Neil's mistakes. And so what they've done is put in place certain activities, and the naming of Carlton Ching, head of DLNR for DLNR head. That is a no-brainer. The governor should be concerned given these facts, and I think they shouldn't come as a shock to any of us. And this is why I draw this conclusion now about David Ige. We are worse off, and I don't mean to say that we should have voted for Mufi or anybody. What I mean is that we should hold the parties more responsible for just handing us anyone that's going to rip us off. So it starts with the party and the Democratic Party, and that's what it is, one big hell of a party, because only certain people get to be named commissions and what have you if they're a member of the party. And so With David Ige naming Carlton Ching, Mr. Ige and others who, and I believe that Ige is absolutely committed to this because he knows the fix is on. He knows that Carlton Ching is going to be confirmed based on all of those things that are in place and the people that are involved. It's a done deal, but he should take a breath and stand back and say to himself, while brushing his teeth or whatever you do when you're looking in the mirror, and say to himself, you know, this is a big, big deal, naming Carlton Ching. I get to name the chairman of the Land and Natural Resources. That means this party or this person that I name and that I appoint and is successful will have the say and dominion over every drop of rain, every drop of water, every stream, every river, every piece of land, every animal. That means fish, birds, and plants. And native people issues will be at the fingertips, the tongue, tip of his tongue with his appointee. And he is so callous and so reckless and so cavalier at naming this person. This person, Carlton Ching, cannot and has not demonstrated that he has the ability or has made a decision that would incorporate all of those things. Now, mind you, he has lobbied on behalf of a party that wishes to diminish the quality or build or what have you. So this is something very serious. So there we have Thielen, who is part of this election. And I inquired just recently, and a lot of this now is just information that I've gotten and I've tried to confirm. And so understand, much of this is not facts, but I will convey to you how difficult it is when I say these things, that they're not fact. I've reached out and attempt to get them answered. But for me, in my capacity, I'm just a knot on the log in their eyes, in their minds, because there's a bigger system. So people like myself who don't call up and ask, oh, I'd love to write a wonderful article about you. Can you come in and tell me all the beautiful things about you? I don't do that. We have that type of media, and they have their public relations people, so they can do that. But we, the people, need to know the hard facts and ask the pointed questions. And so I don't get those answers. So one of the questions I had, for example, I believe that the nominating committee should be known. Who nominates Carlton Ching? How did he get his name in the hat? How did he arrive in such a high position to be considered? So the question is just that. So I inquired of Laura Thielen, which she has commented and I think participating in the selection. And I'm asking, what I've heard, and can't confirm it, and they don't get back to you as you inquire. They take their time. But I had been informed informally, and these are just mere discussions and chatter, but sharing with that and qualifying that, there was Tim Johns, Mr. Mike McCartney, and Jennifer Saba Godo. Now, I could be wrong, but I did, in fact, call Mike McCartney of the governor's office to inquire, but not even a single response, because I don't read. I'm just a Carol Cox show, just a somebody, you know, not a voter, not a citizen of the state, but just somebody who is asking the wrong questions or meddling. And I asked the same questions of Laura Thielen's office. Didn't get any response. So we can't go away, and I can't go away and convey to you and say that these are the facts, but these are the things that causes me concern and causes me when you're being respectful and to ask questions, and then you get ignored completely. It's okay. I mean, I've been ignored so many times, I think it's an honor to be ignored by most of the people now. It's funny how things work. You flip it. But let me go further and to say to you that the climate for corruption, and listen up in the Native Hawaiian community, if you think this is about Carlton Ching, and I noticed someone put him on TV the other night and on Olelo so that he could, it was a sad occasion, the interview, and I'm not judging the interviewer. But the whole thing was just, it was sad to see such behavior when you know what's at stake. You stand to hand the fox while being Akamai and careful and caring and sharing with him and putting him on TV. You're enhancing and you're encouraging the fox or the foxes, the plural. And you're walking them in. Now, I inquired and asked Carlton Ching to come on my show. And I got a response from Dan Davidson that I played for you on the show that said he was too busy right now preparing for his nomination and testifying and appearing before the board. So he's just not going to be participating in any interviews. You heard it. But subsequent to that, I inquired and said, hey, Mr. DLNR, Mr. Public Relations Man, Senior Public Relations Man, I saw him on TV, and that's contrary to what you told me. He rolled me back, and this is so wonderful. I guess I'm a glutton for punishment. I expect these things, and they feel good when I get this kind of response. Now, listen to this. Now, this is the man has already told me he's too busy on behalf of Carlton Ching. Too busy preparing for the testimony and appearance before the committee for his confirmation. And Dan Davidson writes back after I've seen him on TV, contrary to what Dennison told me. And he says, dear Mr. Cox, Mr. Ching's schedule is very busy, and it's not surprising that he wasn't available for your show. Yes, he has done media interviews, and yes, he has been in meeting with individuals and groups as his schedule allows. We've had to say, quote, no, end quote, to a number of requests, and it's not possible to accommodate them all. I understand. But again, it may sound sick, but I love those kinds of responses because what it tells me, keep digging, if they want you outside and looking in, it's fine because all of us shouldn't be drinking the Kool-Aid. You see, that's the joy of, and you might want to join me and not be participating because giving in to this system. So what happens is, let's go back to the DLNR system, the state agency, and we know who they are. They are responsible for all the water, land, and Malamakaaina, Ikapono. But anyway, here we go. There's a gentleman by the name of Fraser McElvray, I should say. He was for a while under William Isla, he was the director of the Department of Aquatic Resources. Now, what does this have to do with Carlton Ching? I don't know, but I want to share with you what we are about to engage in by the appointment of Carlton Ching and what is it at works in the mist here, what's occurring under our noses. And Mr. McElvray was working, and shortly before the elections came up, he departed from DLNR. And he went to work at Malama, the Manalua. What's the name of that place? Anyway. I'll get it in a minute. The bay out there, Manalua Bay. Malama Manalua. Anyway, so what happens is he gets that job. Mr. Fraser, before coming to the DLNR, was an employee, worked with, he indicates on his Facebook and in his LinkedIn and what have you, and in other, you go and Google that name, you'll find that he was with Conservation International. Now, Malama Manalua is chaired by, there is a committee, a board, and Mitch Dollier is on the board. But also the Harold K. Castle Foundation is also involved with the DLNR and Division of Aquatics, and they've given grants. And Dollier sits on that board. So the information that we're getting suggests that the fix is on. There is an effort without consultation to the people of the state and the involvement of the state to privatize, and they're doing a damn good job of it right under our noses. You got the fishermen running around, well, I don't like the monk seal. Too many damn turtles. They eat our hook, and they're raising our prices. Guys, fishermen out there, boaters out there, those of you that use the ocean for recreation and for subsistence or living, you're getting ripped off. You're getting set up. While you're hating the monk seals and the turtles, they're baiting your politicians. And these politicians are taking it hook, line, and sinker. So, even here is, for example, to show you the magnitude. Did you know that NOAA, there is information now that NOAA is considering expanding the humpback whale sanctuary? Did you know that there's been no biologists within the state being consulted officially or formally? Did you know that within the state agency, the DLNR, there are three legal interns? Not civil service people, but three interns that does the writing and the policy making and contributing, and the people that are responsible, I'm told, within the House, are not allowed to do that. So, in other words, there has been a takeover of sort within the DLNR. It's no surprise that right now Mr. Ige sees the position as unimportant and has an acting DLNR. Do you know how substantial these issues are and to safeguard the rights of the native people and their right to their lands and all of those things and the ceded lands and the funding and the compensation that he would leave it? Now we're going, this is March, we're now entering our third month and it's in limbo. He names a fox to guard the hen house, and in turn he has a deputy or an acting head of DLNR, one. Priorities now. DAR has an acting. Department of Land and Natural Resources, DOCARE, Department of Conservation and Enforcement, has an acting. So imagine now what happens when you have acting people. They don't make final decisions, and they're just moseying along to get along because they're acting. And they might have a chance of being named permanently. But this climate that has been exposed or presented to the DLNR is something we should be concerned with. The nonprofits are giving money, so to speak, but nothing is free, ladies and gentlemen. You know that by now if you're old as I am. There's nothing free. Everything costs you. And these organizations, they don't just give you money in these instances and walk away. Now, mind you, they have the same values and the same concerns for the resources, but you must be reminded that this is a state agency. This is a government agency set in place by the Constitution of the state and should not be whittled down by backdoor dealings and friends and of families and friends of business. And that is the killing part of this. But I want to share with you, when Abercrombie came in and did the PLDC. Now remember, Thielen came in with the recreational renaissance. Abercrombie came in with the PLDC. In my opinion, in my observation, how these work, if you have a government and you believe that it's so substantially flawed or failing, either you, in the capacity of a legislator, fix it, or you tell the public that you are abandoning it and you go back and rewrite the Constitution that authorized these agencies or authorize a structure of government. But unless that happened, then you should not be engaged in whispering and preaching privatization and then bringing your friends in and they all have special needs. So when they give you money, there is an obligation to it. Ladies and gentlemen, when a man goes to the bar and he sits there and it's a bachelor's bar and it's a singles bar and it's the music's going and the playing's going, that's why I play that, is to say that when you walk in. Now, there are some guys will buy you a drink and never expect anything. But just for your information, for some of you that haven't figured that out or maybe just entering the bar age, just know that some guys buy drinks and they want something from you. They want to be in your life. They want to eventually dictate your life. And that's similar to what's happening with the nonprofits, in my observation, in my opinion. They don't hand you the money and says, do your thing. Hopefully, if you need more money and your efforts fail or you need a little more, we'll give you a little more boost. But no, in these instances, here's the money. Now, we want to be part of your whole process, your rulemaking, your policies, and all of that. We want to be instrumental. We want to author them. We want to do this. And we do that by not involving the civil service employees who are, by mandate, by the legislative process, have been installed, authorizing certain number of positions, funding. They go in and they ask for monies from the legislators, declaring that in order to accomplish this, we need this amount of money to hire these number of people, a biologist and all. But that's all thrown to the wind now. What is happening, this recent bill with the aquarium bill, there was some hoo-hoo about that or some trouble that I'm still researching it, where the submittal of one of those bills were actually, or the we'll call it, I don't know what it is, a legislation bill or law or a plan, a management plan or something, was disagreed upon, and Isla had to sign it himself, and somewhere there's suggestions that McElvery did not wish to sign it. Caller, good morning. Go ahead with your comment.
I think that there's some serious mischaracterization going on as it relates to some of the support that nonprofits give to people in conservation efforts.
Well, you want to be specific?
Yeah. He's whipping his thing into a conspiracy.
Okay.
If we looked into what the money, how the money from Castle Foundation gets spent, there's an amazing amount of good it does to try and improve our nearshore waters. It services like 30 different communities around the island. And when they put legal
people into the DLNR on fellowships, they're helping where it's stuck. The bureaucracy is so they don't get funded enough to do their mandates.
Mm-hmm.
So what they've got is they've got some people in there that try and help them.
Well, what has been your efforts? Clearly, you're close to the situation. What can you share with us that you've done or your nonprofits have done to fix the problem rather than hand the money and then become a partner with them? Is it
okay? So
without characterizing, that is the fact. I never saw a campaign on your part to speak out publicly and be critical of the broken or the failure to appoint or the failure to incorporate people that are qualified. I never saw that. So all I see is money being handed. And at the end of the day, there's the boasting of, look what we've done. The facts are there are interns within government now. The facts are we have a situation where they are only acting.
Yeah, but it's knowledge based. It's getting things done that the bureaucracy can't get done. To characterize it in a negative way, I don't think is necessarily fair.
Well, I don't know what fair and what you use to gauge
well,
it.
Well, you know, the other thing that you did that irritated me a little bit is you say, well, this guy knows this buddy, and so now there's collusion. You know, whenever somebody does give money on a grant, no matter where, and there's millions and hundreds of millions of dollars given away every year in grants,
mm-hmm.
You do have terms and conditions. You have to meet them.
Yeah, I understand that.
Not collusion.
Yeah, I understand that. For example, if your organization, if you are, I'm just going to take the liberty of saying you're defending them. If your organization gives money, the federal government gives them $1 million from NOAA, for example, Coast Guard gives them $1 million, and we still, when we pick up the phone and call and we can't get a response, we get a recording, and you give them more money, the situation is it seems that the things that you are specifically interested in get attended to. But the bigger picture, the fisherman issues and the concerns there and all of that, and then the fees that are raised and what have you without participation, I'm sorry, that's not characterization. That's reflecting what is occurring. And the difference between characterization without being informed, but to describe something, and if you listened to me in total, you would have understood.
I understand your frustration as to not liking to deal with automated phone systems. It's not uncommon to spend 45 minutes to an hour to try and find out that you got the wrong number. It's we're not only is the government giving us bad phone service, but so are an awful lot of large companies like Sears and insurance companies and on and on and on.
Well, see, that's an interesting point. I think then that tells me and suggests to me that you don't fully understand the true nature of this. We're talking about a land and natural resources, for example, when we say characterizing an automated phone not being answered. This is about poachers, people using. There are fishermen that occur out there at nighttime, fishermen fish in the daytime. When you have that type of activity, you need enforcement. So when you represent that we have game wardens patrolling, and then you call up and they're off at 4:30 and it goes to a recording and a answering service and someone is actually killing or stabbing or there's a monk seal entangled in a net just 50 feet offshore and no one can come because there's no money to be paid for overtime. See, that's nothing to do with the recording.
No, I agree with you. It
okay.
has to do with funding.
Okay.
I did that just this week. There was a bunch of poachers. I called in an hour. They couldn't come, so we went down and talked to them about it. It's very uncomfortable to have to stand in when the DLNR isn't available.
Yeah, so, and the other thing is, you see, when we talk about characterization, I have a nonprofit. I'm a citizen. I'm entitled to certain information. But just to share with you the dilemma or the disparaging or the dichotomy, here we have here. There are organizations that can walk in the door and possibly have keys to the state office and the records and what have you. But me as a nonprofit, who don't give money, but have knowledge and willing to participate and work with them, I'm held off at the front door and given a bill for 2 pages if I want them. You understand, these are the things that...
It's horrible.
No, not horrible. It is a sad occasion that anybody would embrace that kind of and say, let's move forward on our programs. We look at the environment as a bigger picture. I do. I don't know about you.
Well, I do, too. I agree with half of what you say, but the other half of things you're saying, I'd sure like to be in a room and talk to you about
well,
it.
Well, I would welcome you to come in, and I would like to invite you right now, formally, coming weeks, if you find the time, I'll give you as much time as you like. But just know that I watch this daily, and this is not just a DLNR. I'm just saying to you that there, if it's homeless issues, we see money being handed out, but we don't see results. But we see private organizations involved touting theirs, send more money. We see those things. And I'm not objecting to nonprofits wanting to enhance the environment. I would be a fool. But on the other hand, let's not continue to see this body, this vehicle, this vessel called the DLNR government as a means of getting in and infiltrating and then letting it work for us and not for the bigger picture as an environment in total.
Well, I consider you a watchdog hero, and I want you to keep up the good work.
Thank you. But give me a call, 782-662. Okay, but make it soon now. Make it soon. Thank you. Well, caller, you can call back. Anyway, I don't mean to sound like my dandruff, but it is. Because there's something more important than all of us out here. We're sitting here at the doorstep of evolution, and we're watching it, and we're causing what has taken place, something so magnificent. And we submit it and dip it into a cesspool of politics and just selfishness. And however, if you're offended by it, please call up. You're welcome to tell me off. But I'm giving you my perspective and my observations and saying to you, stand back and look to see. It's not my opinion. You got mongoose running around during the daytime, eating the birds, doing anything, eating, competing with native species. That was a decision made, but bringing them here was made by biologists, or by the state agencies. Well, not only is that an example of that, conflicts in the environment, but it says that, say that, remember now, why did they bring them here? To service the agricultural industry. And the agriculture industry probably used pressure, gave money, had the director appointed, had the governor appointed, and used its influence. You see, egrets, the white egrets, are here because we introduced them on special interest. Christmas trees come in. We don't want to impact the Christmas tree industry, but every bug in the planet can come from Christmas trees. And what do? So these are the things that I speak of, and I don't mean to malign organization. It's not the intent. The intent here in this conversation is to convey to you that something's badly broken, and when senators and representatives sit down and entertain and conceal the whole vetting process, and when the governor names a lobbyist, it's not characterizing or mischaracterizing. That's just reflecting the facts. And to say the importance that is placed on the environment is zero or very low compared to the interests of business. And that's where we lose our position. This is where we're losing the environment. This is how buildings can spring up overnight. This is how we can see a public resources, Kiwalo Basin, commandeered, handed so gladly by the governor and the legislators. A recreation resource, a harbor, land. This is how we see the land when we talk about this greater depth, in greater depth. We look at the sewage treatment plant. You want to talk about influence and privatization and all. I didn't see a new pipe or new plant or modify to take on the increased amount of sewage that would be generated by these new businesses and these new functions. Didn't see that. I saw these things being built on an infrastructure that's old and antiquated. And what does that mean? Now, we talk about, oh, well, it's not going to carry, it doesn't have the capacity, it doesn't do this, and we got privatization, and we got another. Here's the reality, ladies and gentlemen. The more crap you put in the pipe, and if you don't, you're not processing it, and you're not treating it, secondary, tertiary, whatever, if you're only doing primary, and that's a piss-poor job there, pardon the pun, and you're dumping it a mile off in a pipe, and then you wake up and say, well, look, it's floating back to Waikiki. I'm sorry. These are the things that I'm talking about. When the you-know-what hits the fan and hits the waves and wash back in your face, it's not about not liking an organization. It's about talking about the crippled condition that we see these state agencies, namely this one, the DLNR. So we have no problem with talking about how fragile our environment is. No problem. We have no problem with telling how irreplaceable and how rare. And Hawaii has the largest number of species on the endangered species list. Wonder why. So this isn't, and please call it, I hate it when they disappear, but please feel free, 782-6627 is my personal number. We'll make that available, and if I'm wrong, you let me know, but let's be more specific, and I have this little violin on my finger here, and I am not singing a sad song. I'm saying to you, folks out there, the fix is on. Don't just focus on Carlton Ching. That is just a symptom of what is really occurring. That's just an indicator of what's occurring. Now, I might be wrong, but I'm informed, and these are pretty good sources, that during this time, there have been some 25 people to file a complaint within the agency, DLNR, regarding McElvey's, and also there's another person named Emma Anders, who is the acting, or is the deputy, or whatever, the acting director of DAR. So when you look at things like, well, we have supposedly coral having a problem. We have the reduction of various species in numbers and what have you. And we have someone that's acting. Someone, I'm informed there's some questions about the actual hiring and promotion of this person, Emma Anderson. Anders, we're going to ask these questions. And again, I submit to you, I make a strong effort to get information. But there's this mindset or this attitude that I'm a nothing and a nobody. And I don't know about you, but whatever your assessment is of me, I think pretty damn high of myself. And that's the problem, you see. I know what I do, and I know what my love, and it's not just motivated by love for the environment, because that could be misguided too, you see. But the reality is, when you see millions and millions of dollars thrown at, and you see this, and you have to ask yourself, what are we getting out of it? What is happening? The same people have their orchestrating in government this ability to... Neil Abercrombie comes to town, and he steps down as congressman, and look at the things that happen. His buddies and his friends was a shoe-in. And again, Ige, as I said to you, the governor, has basically come in and said to us, if you think Neil Abercrombie was slick and sly, wait. I've written a new book on this, because the importance that you place on the environment is very important. It's probably one of the main things in our economy, as many brag about, inviting people here to see the beautiful mountains and the beautiful birds and the rare birds. But here's a letter of commendation presented to North Maui Community Fisheries Enforcement Unit. Now, within house, this is on behalf of the people of the state of Hawaii. It is with great pleasure that I commend the officers and administrators of the North Maui Community Fisheries Enforcement Unit of the Department of Land and Natural Resources on the first anniversary of their work enforcing regulations and building community support around revitalizing the North Maui fishery. The CFEU is a product of the DLNR Division of Conservation and Enforcers Resource Management, DOCARE, unique partnership with Conservation International, Hawaii Fish Trust, and Harold Castle Foundation. These two nonprofit organizations provided resources and equipment, including a dedicated vessel to allow you to focus your efforts on improving the waters of the Maui. Well, I would say great, but I didn't see mention of one local fishing group or anything as part of this. And it saddens me to know that if you're given a new boat and there's a bigger boat sitting here in the harbor in Honolulu with a tree growing out the engine, that's a good decision. Keep the money coming, folks. And then if you really want to look at it, and let's ask the questions, what did you do in these fishery units that you supposedly statewide, but only one occurs in Maui so far? And what kind of enforcement took place? I'm informed internally that the bulk of the tickets that were given were parking tickets and stickers, trailer tickets. So I'm sorry, folks. I know better. We have no legitimate protection of the environment. There was money given to get our officers certified in Kalia. and that's a national organization. They spent money. Money was donated. Where is the certification? So we're grinding and we're sending people to the mainland for these trainings, and we're sending people to the mainland within these agencies to learn how to do boating, and they one, for example, fails to qualify. And they give them a new boat. And they got boats sitting around, ladies and gentlemen. And then there, if you go on the internet, you'll see Randy Awo, former director of law enforcement, chief of law enforcement for DLNR, DOCARE. He's accepting a key from this nonprofit. And that's not to say they're bad, but I'm just telling you, listeners out there, that fix the problem first. Why throw good money after bad money? But it lends itself in these conditions. It lends itself as not to indict others to say that this is what you're doing. But historically, I've known we've had instances where people, when you're weak, they get to move in and do their thing. Now, is that saying that this organization? No. I'm just telling you, we need to fix the DLNR. We need to make sure that when we see an appointment, that when we see people promoted in, they're not promoted because their friend and their uncle washed dishes at the last Democratic Party, or that their aunt cooked good lau lau, or Uncle Joe or Uncle Bobby brought in lau lau leaves. We can't find ourselves giving away the environment which belongs to all of us for a few. We can't. I don't see any Native Hawaiian group being mentioned in here or being incorporated into this whole scheme. I don't see it. Too many things that are at stake here. Too many people have so much to be had or that is theirs, and yet they're not participating. And I'm still waiting to see what happens with this situation, if it's true, if it comes forward with the NOAA expanding or what they plan on doing, because I'm informed 2 years ago or so they floated that out there. And this is per people within-house, within the agency, DLNR, saying that they, now the biologists, do not go and meet with the legislators. They don't participate in the planning. The interns do that. The Emma Anders does that. So, mind you, just because you're associated with someone doesn't mean you're guilty of anything. But when you step back and you see how tattered and frayed and worn down the system is, and when you have the starting with the chief as an acting, what are you going to get out of that? What? Is there anything? So, again, ladies and gentlemen, please watch this nomination. And I submit to you, just because they didn't call me and call me back and answer my questions does not mean they're guilty of anything. But it's sure as hell funny that when others can have complete access to government and get into writing the policies and have access to public records and all of that, and I call up and I get slapped in the face or get disrespected or get put off or get chastised because I fail to accept the fact that you tell me one thing and I accept that, but then I find something different. Don't be mad at me. Just understand that some of us, and I'm not just solely or single person out here concerned with these issues, many, many, many people see what is going on. They just don't know how to react or where to react. But I would say to you, I had Mr. Ige on the show to basically let him commit himself to telling us what in this thing about privatization. There's nothing good to come of it because most of the people that get involved, they have their own agenda. I don't want to be part of a committee. I want to be able to find, see the problems, be able to go to a respectable body and say, this is what, as a citizen, I observe. Please use this to add to your efforts to manage our natural resources. I don't say, please let me be part of the board so that I can be part of that, and then when it comes down to permits and all of those things, and I have an interest in land and all of those things, that I'm going to seek permits from you. All of that. And this is nothing new here. It's nationwide when it comes to the resources. But again, this is about the DLNR and about the state. This isn't about nonprofits and what they do, because they're only doing what the state or what conditions or the governor should say, we're going to time out. We're going to rescind the name, remove that from the nomination list of Carlton Ching, and we're going to do a legitimate recruit. It's about time for that, because you see, we're inviting, as time goes on, we're increasing in population and demand on the resources. So we can't have yesterday's lackadaisical approach to this, or the importance of it, minimum importance assigned to it. Every day presents new challenges for the environment. Every single day. So we need to get away from those things that are weakening or conflict or slows or causes a sluggish response to the management of our resources. I'm told they spent $100,000 in DAR just to adjust the cubicles. And then I'm told some instances they were having to scrape the bottom to pay their electric bill. And there are questions, and I sent a question, and things are being talked about within agency of travel, traveling first class. Who would be traveling first class? I'm told that there was a need for the travel was justified first class because they had medical problems and have medical. I don't know. I've inquired about that. We will hopefully get a response. But again, more than likely, I submitted requests for information from DLNR, and we'll see what they do. It'll probably cost me an arm and a leg, but we'll try to get to it. So anyway, this nomination, it's a no-brainer. It should be done. He should be the name rescinded and seeking a better candidate. So we'll talk to you in the next hour, and we have some interesting things coming up, talking about Keep the Country Country. And we're going to be talking to Joshua Noga, and we'll introduce the other friend or the party with him, and we're talking about that. And see you in the next hour. Aloha.
In the rain, it may sound crazy, but I want to go outside. In the rain, cause I think I'm gonna cry. See me cry. want to go outside. In the rain, it may sound crazy, but I want to go outside. In the rain.
Stay tuned for the second half of the Carol Cox Show right after the news on KWAI Honolulu, K108.
Let me see you jump and twist. Pump your fist, cause you know it's hard to resist. That's how you know you're rolling with the love specialist. Feel the vibe, every good to groove in the hits. The night is young, so make a roll with the fun. You got some gum, take it out, give me some. Cause I'm about to play an old girl like a drum. She's the shag of time for it's all said and done. Girl, what you gonna do with all that body?
Shake it up,
get through the thing before you hurt somebody.
Shake it up,
you're a baby.
It's time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now, here's Carol.
Okay. Hey, good morning again. Welcome to the Carol Cox Show. By the way, I failed to mention, you can pick us up on KWAI 1080 AM on the Internet. Or you could go to carolcox.com and live stream. 524-1080 is the number if you'd like to call in or have something to share with. And any questions? And as I said earlier, I have Mr. Joshua Noga, Aloha Aina no Ko Lao, Haulo side. And then I have my friend
Tim Vanderveer.
Tim Vanderveer. Veer. And Tim, is, we've talked to him before, and we're talking about keep the country country. If you see the paper today, it's just a coincidence, I guess, that there's two articles about this situation making expanding in Laie. So, Tim, if you would go ahead first, introduce yourself, and you also have a press release. So, Tim Vanderveer, he's a co-chair of Defend Oahu Coalition. They're a 501c3 nonprofit and comprised of a diverse group of community residents, environmentalists, activists, religious leaders, all working together toward one immediate goal: protecting communities on Oahu from the dangerous effects of large-scale development. Defend Oahu Coalition has been the vanguard of the movement to, quote, keep the country country for the past 9 years, defending DefendOahuCoalition.org. And I might add, their bumper sticker is on every car.
That's right. That's right. Almost 50,000 bumper stickers since we got started.
I love it. I think to myself, boy, that's a message, if nothing else.
It resonates, doesn't it?
Yes.
Well, first of all, thank you, Mr. Cox. I couldn't have said that better myself, actually. Really appreciate the opportunity to be here. Both Josh and I are trying to get the word out, and all the folks from our organization are trying to get the word out. We've got a big hearing coming up this coming Thursday down at Honolulu Hale. It's going to start at 10 o'clock a.m., and Bill 47, what we're here to talk about, is the second item on the agenda. And so we're encouraging folks to send in testimony, to come down Thursday morning to Honolulu Hale and express their desire to keep the country country. Whether you live in town, in Ko'olauloa, on the North Shore, wherever you're coming from, it's important that everybody voice your concerns about this bill, because this is a bill with a kind of a turbulent history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, coming down, we're talking about, we want farmers, fishermen, those that work both the land and sea, that we're trying to protect, you know, the resources that Ko'olauloa provides, in not only for our people in regards to sustenance, but the ability to feed not just Ko'olauloa, but everyone else. Okay? Now, so that's what we're trying to protect in regards to you know, stopping Bill 47 and the reckless development of Kolau Law.
And this, you say it involves or envision Lae.
It does. So so the history I referred to for Bill 47 started back in the early 1990s when the Neighborhood Board approved a plan that HRI, Hawaii Reserves Incorporated, it's the development arm of the LDS Church out in Laie, they had a plan to expand BYU, to build a shopping center, and to provide affordable housing, over 500 units of affordable and elderly housing to the community out there. And so it was approved. Everybody on the community was on board. It was an expansion within the community of Laie. And they built their shopping center. They expanded the university. But they never provided that affordable housing. And so about 20 years later now, we're looking at a situation where, again, after they've had a couple of their pet projects approved and constructed, they're saying they need to build affordable housing. Only this time they're saying they need to do that in an ahupua'a that is a state agricultural district, which is Malaikahana, which is not within the community boundary of Laie. And duly appointed and invited a group of community residents known as the Public Advisory Committee got together and made recommendations for what should be in the Ko'olauloa Sustainable Communities Plan. It was a diverse group of residents, community leaders, some of the development interests were involved, everybody had a voice. And what they said was, we shouldn't be expanding, we shouldn't be paving over state agricultural land, we shouldn't be expanding the urban boundary. Ko'olauloa is not supposed to be urbanized, the general plan tells us that. They also recommended putting Turtle Bay into a special management district in line with what sort of happened with the conservation there. But what happened was that plan came out of the pack and did not include expansion or any construction in Malaikahana. DPP met with the developers and then put out another plan, a different plan from that of the community, and that's the plan that is now known as Bill 47. And it does include an enormous development proposed in Malaikahana of up to 1,200 homes, a strip mall, a light industrial park, also goes back to the original plan that grandfathers in 5 hotels and 1,000 condominiums at Turtle Bay Resort, which, as we all know, is not the trajectory that the resort is currently on. They're working with the state. We've achieved a conservation partnership at Turtle Bay. And so the reason we're here is because Councilmember Ikaika Anderson, who chairs the Zoning and Planning Committee, has proposed a couple of amendments to take all references to Malaikahana out of Bill 47. So, in other words, stop any development proposed for that pristine piece of land. And we're going to go in on Thursday and show him that we support those amendments because it reflects what the community wants, all the community.
So his amendments are taking out the language referencing Malaikahana. And vision. What other portion is he introducing this bill?
Well, he's not,
not
to
in
my
the
knowledge,
bill
introducing anything new to it, Bill 47. What he's doing is, he is eliminating the language that includes Envision Laie, which was added behind closed doors in that closed door meeting between DPP and representatives of BYU Hawaii Polynesian Culture Center and Turtle Bay. So, you know, he's with eliminating of that language is more reflective of the community's pack, is what Tim was talking about. That's actually a reflection of the entire broader community rather than just one specific minority interest in there.
Well, that's you got not ahead of me, but you answered, because Envision Laie, I'm thinking, how did it get, it was supposed to be excluded from this originally, how did it get in? And you're saying, were there meetings recently, or when did it get inserted?
So in 2006 is when the actual PAC, the community members, comprised of about 27 different community members, which HRI and Eric Beaver, who's a CEO of HRI, Hawaii Reserves Incorporated, the for-profit arm of the LDS Church, he was a part of that planning committee, along with Chun James, along with Creighton and Kathy Mattoon, who were the founders, actually coined the term Keep the Country Country, two Native Hawaiian leaders. So this is something that the PAC, they actually came up together, right, and the community approved that. We said, okay, we understand that there's a need. We're not trying to ignore affordable housing. We want that. But we want you guys to do is fulfill the promises that you did in our community 25 years ago when we allowed you to expand with the shopping center, when we allowed you to expand on PCC. A big part of that was allowing for the affordable housing within the existing existing boundary with low to mid-rise affordable homes. Carol, I grew up right here, right across the street in Kukui Gardens.
Okay.
So I'm very familiar with what affordable housing should look like.
Right.
Okay, but my mother is born and raised from Ho'ula. And so I had the interesting perspective of growing up right here in Kalihi in knowing in low to medium income housing, affordable housing, and what that looks like. And so when they're saying that we need to build a brand new development that's going to look much like Mililani, okay, and that's going to provide affordable housing for our residents, I know that's a flat-out lie because you guys have already had 25 years to build the low-medium-rise apartments, but you haven't. So what are you guys going to do differently now that's saying that you guys need this whole new development without even state, you know, zoning? They don't even have any of those approvals yet, Tim.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. And when we say envision Laiea, I think folks out there need to know that this is a term the developer coined, right? And as Joshua alluded to the PAC or referenced the PAC's meeting back in 2006, they met for 2 years. These are volunteers from the community that met for 2 years. They put out a plan in 2009 that reflected the visions for the entire, all the communities in Ko'olauloa. And then after that fact, then the developer comes out with this Envision Laiea plan, which is really an invasion into state agricultural land, and propose this huge new city at Malai Kahana. What they're proposing would be bigger than either Laiea or Kahuku on either side of it. And one of the things we know that the general plan says is that Ko'olauloa should be defined by its community boundaries and its rural nature. And this would completely eliminate that. As Josh said, it's basically Mililani. It's pavement from the time you enter Kahuku until the time you leave Haula, really.
An expanded highway?
Well, that's a big question mark, right? We don't have the infrastructure for it.
Let's talk about how are they going to alleviate traffic within their plan, okay? Because that is what got me involved into this issue. Now, within their Envision Laiea plan, they propose to build a Mauka connector road that will run from Kahuku through Laiea, through Malai Kahana, all the way to Laiea, essentially connecting the three communities.
Right.
Now, what got me involved was when I watched the video of a kupuna, a land strong, Koa Wahine, strong warrior. Her name is Auntie Dawn Wasson.
Yeah.
And she lives out there in Laiea on Kuleana lands that were part of the original 212 families that were given the Kuleana lands of the unencumbered Ahupua of Laiea. That's the entire Ahupua of Laiea.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Auntie Dawn is one of the few who continue to not only live on her Kuleana lands, her Ohana grow kalo, they grow the food that they eat, and they continue to do so as their family has done for generations.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what this Mauka connector road, and she's had many legalities. They're actually in court right now with HRI over the illegalities of HRI continuing to invade, impose their will onto these Kuleana lands. Okay, and so HRI is proposing to build a Mauka connector road that cuts right through about 30 acres of that Kuleana land. And what they want is they want taxpayers to pay for that. So they want taxpayers to get involved to displace a Kuleana landholder so that they can build a Mauka connector road that will alleviate the traffic that their massive urbanization development will dump onto her. And that's just preposterous.
And will Bill 47, if passed, will it authorize that? Or will they have to come back and amend or write another bill? Or?
Well, with the elimination of Envision Laiea from Bill 47, it essentially takes away the threat onto Auntie Dawn Wasson's and the Kuleana landholders that live there, because there is no more massive development. Now, HRI would still own the 300-plus acres in Malai Kahana, but it would require them to use it toward agricultural purposes and feed our community, not build a huge development,
mm-hmm.
and then essentially saying that, well, to have this development, we're going to need a road that's going to then threaten another landholder, and essentially asking for the government to use things like eminent domain. Now, eminent domain has been it's been a problem on our side, and there's actually one of our great allies, Anthony Chun James, that had a property. I don't want to get off topic here, mm-hmm. but it just talks about how these big corporations, okay, are having these buddy-buddy relationships with our elected officials behind closed doors, and then are just approving these plans. And that's why it's so important that Ikaika Anderson came out. He came out and he made a stand and saying, this is not Pono. Look at the community. He's coming out and he's saying that. And that's why we're going to come here and throw our support for Ikaika Anderson and Council Chair Martin, mm-hmm. who don't want to extend the rural growth boundary, the urban growth boundary into rural agricultural lands.
Now, there are endangered species. And so that the listeners don't think, you know, when these issues come up, we say native people and then we say endangered species, as if that's some way of throwing up a smokescreen. The reality is this area is some of the last remaining habitat for these species and the displacement of yet another native family. I see a mass exodus. I'm going to go out to Kaina Point and I'm going to see every native Hawaiian standing there with the bag looking for to leave because there won't be any place to everything is
absolutely
being developed.
That, Carl, you know, you're hitting on the points here because that's part of the public misinformation, mm-hmm. that HRI is spinning, that we need to build this development for the very people that live out here, have grown out here, so they can continue to stay here. But when you build real estate in a free market economy, you can't just limit just, oh, Hawaiians to have this house. Right?
Right,
we're in the United States of America. Okay, personal views aside, mm-hmm. all right, and certain laws restrict you from discriminating against a certain race. So when you throw out a huge development like that, you open it up to the market, and that's why I'm saying this is not going to be the answer that's going to keep Hawaiians in Laie. The answer is preventing any more development, and in fact, putting more money into like small farmers and putting more money into these communities where we can become more independent from the actual economic kidnappers. If they're holding us economic hostages, like BYU Hawaii, PCC, and Turtle Bay, okay, they use this economic hostages.
We're talking about increasing this construction, the size, the development. What happened to the discussion on the sewage treatment plant? Now, I have a question and had a question way back. What did they do to address the new volume of sewage? And then who's going to pay for the treatment plant? Because if they want us to pay for the connector roads, then who is going to pay for the sewage treatment plant? The existing sewage treatment plant is woefully inadequate. They're out there.
Yep.
And I have questions with the historical dumping and the processes and the operation of that. So have they addressed that? And does Bill 47 even speak to the need or the...
Not in the context of this proposed development.
Huh?
And there's still a lot of... there's not a lot of questions that we've had answered about flood mitigation... That's in connection with the existing hotel. You mentioned roads earlier.
Right.
Carol, let me ask you, when's the last time you were out on the North Shore in Ko'olaloa?
About a month ago.
Okay, what was traffic like?
It wasn't too good that time of day. I think there was some incident or something that had happened. But
probably
shut down part
of the highway.
They were also trimming trees. So that occasion wasn't, because of the type.
Do you happen to notice, like in Ka'ava, where it's the road is literally falling into the ocean?
Well, that I recently didn't see it, but a while back I did a story on that actually and photographed the houses that are being wiped out in that area, pretty much impacted. And I didn't see the road. But
what I'm getting at is we're dealing with a 2-lane, 100-year-old highway.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the infrastructure on the North Shore and in Ko'olaloa will not support the type of development that's being proposed here. We've already got horrible traffic problems in the country. And what's happening is these guys are making proposals They're submitting them to DPP, and this was actually submitted under the last director of DPP, David Tenoy, who was asked, okay, well, what are we going to do? Like, if they indeed build this out at Malaikahana and the connector road doesn't solve all their problems, which it won't, because what happens in La'ie does not stay in La'ie. It affects traffic all the way down the coastline. What are you going to do? And the director at that time made an offhand remark. He said, well, we'll just widen the highway. But as Josh said, that means condemning private property of families that have lived on that highway for generations.
For the sake of the developer.
For the sake of the developer. And that in my mind, brings up maybe the most important point, is who is determining our future? Is it the people, our friends and neighbors, the people that we elect to public office, or is it developers and private interests and corporations?
This developer, who will benefit financially from the actual ORI?
HRI.
I'm sorry. Oh, I keep confusing it. HRI.
Hawaii Reserves Incorporated.
Right. They are the ones who will benefit financially.
Well, they're the for-profit arm of the LDS Church. So really, the decisions are being made in Salt Lake City.
Right. Or and then what do they do? Call up the city and get their...
They've got a professional, real slick PR team. They've got a team of lawyers. I mean, they've got a professional machine put together to get
Mufti
this thing
Hanuman
pushed through.
Mufti Hanuman, did he at one time work with him? But I know in his administration, he was quite favorable to them.
He is. And he was the mayor at the time. This was originally kind of cooked up. And unfortunately, Mayor Caldwell has continued that legacy of colluding with the developers and pushing this unfortunate project. But again, you know, we're here to support the amendments that Councilmember Anderson has put in this bill and, you know, encourage folks to come out and testify because, as I said, you know, this isn't just about La'ie. It's not just about Ko'olau Lo or even the North Shore. We're talking about the entire island. This affects everybody.
Yeah. The question I have to this, they're not here, but I would ask it rhetorically, what are you going to do with all the waste? That to me is the biggest concern.
Carol.
And then what about emergency care and responsibility? And if you build it, you're going to have bigger roads, and how are you going to pay for that, and who's going to be impacted? And emergency care is important. That road right now, getting to respond to an emergency situation is difficult, and not to mention, is this a tsunami zone, or can it be impacted?
Yes, absolutely. We are right on the coast. Now, to answer your first question in regards to all of the waste, we had some pretty heavy rains a couple of days ago out there in Ko'olau Lo. But Kara, I would invite you, and I'm actually going to call you the next time it starts to rain, because out in Ko'olau Lo, we get the type of rain where it'll rain, you know, 4 or 5 days straight. And so, you know, one of those rains, I'm going to call you. I'm going to invite you. I'm going to tell you to come out right then. And I'm going to take you to La'ie. I'm going to put you right in front of Hukilau Beach, which is the private beach of the town of La'ie, which essentially they got their little river. And we're going to watch. You're going to record all of the waste that gets dumped into that bay right there, Malaikahana Bay. And you're going to see it for yourself.
You say waste, human waste or trash?
Well, here's what... La'ie has a huge flood problem, okay? Right. And most of the people that live out there, they either have a cesspool or a septic.
Okay,
and when it starts to flood, all of the cesspool things come up, and then they divert all of that flood water into one of those drains that just drains out into the sea.
Right.
And that's why it's heavy rains that when it causes the flood will then bring up. And that's why I'm saying, you know, people always talk about that, you know, answering all of these questions in regards to building affordable housing, we've got to be putting money into things like flood mitigation already. And those are the things that, you know, we're distracting from. You know, we shouldn't be talking about building more development. We should be talking about putting that money into what we have right now, improve the infrastructure right now, so it doesn't dump waste into Malaikahana Bay.
You're listening to the Carol Cox Show. My guest is Mr. Tim Vandeveer and Mr. Joshua Noga, and they are with the Defend Oahu Coalition, And Aloha Aina no Ko'olau Loa. So, anyway, we got a caller. We'll see. Good morning, caller. Go ahead with your comments or questions.
Hi.
Hi.
This is Andrea Anixton Kava.
Yes.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm fine. How are you doing?
I'm okay.
I just wondered if you have covered the subject about how many urban zone vacant lots there are already in Ko'olauloa.
Oh, maybe you can tell us a little bit about that, Andrea.
Yeah. Well, the DPP has determined a partial count after being asked since 2007. They came up with a partial count of 4,356 urban zone vacant R5, R7.5, and country classification lots. Only the ones under 20-degree slope, and that is just from Covella Bay to Kualoa Ranch. So this could more than double the population right there, building in infill, and not even bringing in Molai Kahana. And this is something that they try to keep quiet, it seems like, and make preposterous statements about, like it wouldn't increase traffic. Right. And the tourism increase also, I think, is important. It's now around $5 million a year, and it's the Hawaii Tourism Authority has estimated $7.25 million annually on Oahu by 2023. That's only 8 years from now, and this bill is supposed to last till 2035 and 2040, actually, now, in the Sustainable Communities Plan. So, you know, the major side factors that don't get considered much are these already zoned lots and this increase of traffic through the tourist increase and the 1,195 underestimated amount of VRBOs, or those, you know, transient vacation rentals in the area. That's not counting ones that are in, like, Germany. They have publications there that have tourist accommodations here, like in people's, you know, like the VRBOs. But, and I also personally know quite a few pilots and people like that that have, you know, they put it in industry rentals.
Mm-hmm.
So there's way more than that even, you know. It's just mm-hmm. that none of this gets counted as to what will happen when all of, you know, as all of this is pushed onto that two-lane road. And we had a lane, actually, part of a lane, fall in the ocean about a month ago in Ka'ava, right by Crouching Lion Restaurant there. So, you know, this one of these days, you know, that whole road is just not enough infrastructure.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thank you. Tim?
I think Andrea makes a great point there about capacity and the existing capacity we already have. Besides the development that they were approved to build within La'ie, not in a new Ahupua'a, but within the community, right? They were approved to build over 500 homes back in the 1990s. Besides that, there's a lot of capacity throughout Ko'olauloa to do what they're asking to do. So every time you see Eric Beaver, for instance, who today in the paper, he's the president of HRI, every time you see him light his hair on fire and say, oh, we've got to build affordable housing, you know, we've got generations under one roof. Yeah, we need affordable housing, and there are generations, multi-generations, living under one roof. But he says, well, just a fraction of Molai Kahana. That's not true.
Mm-hmm.
He's misleading the public. It's a manufactured crisis on the part of HRI. They had an opportunity to alleviate this problem over 20 years ago. And so when he says we absolutely have to have Molai Kahana and everybody's going to get a home, that's not true. It's just not true.
Yeah.
Well, and are they going to invite are they going to increase their population of students? I mean, will any of this?
Yeah, they want to double that.
Right.
So,
and that's what's taking up most of the family housing in La'ie, because you have 10, 20, and 30 students. There's one house on La'ie Point that has 30 students living in it. And they've all taken up the family housing, so that's why you get all these people complaining about the lack of housing, because they don't build enough dorms on campus, you know, and this has created this problem.
And the lowest density of any university in the state of Hawaii on BYU. Mm-hmm. They're not building dorms, not going up like they do at UH. There's mm-hmm. even been talk about, you know, some sort of a compromise to allow for some of the height restrictions to be eased within La'ie to accommodate mm-hmm. for that. They're not interested in hearing that. They want to mm-hmm. continue to expand the university. And I would argue that the original mission of the university is not being fulfilled right now, and I know
right.
there's a lot of concern within La'ie that's happening.
When BYU came out to the community, it was so that it would be they would actually come get educated from across the world. They could come here into La'ie and get educated, and then go back and educate and help to educate, you know, the people of their homeland. both not only in the United States, but also across the world. And majority of that time, they've done that. But it's really been in this last 20 years that, and really specifically in the last 10, that they've had put on their development, their developer hat on, and now they're no qualms about it. They're saying we need to build Malaika Hana so that we can expand BYU Hawaii, so that we can more than double our campus here, and provide housing, workforce housing, and that's something that's not fulfilling their original mission,
mm-hmm.
you know. And BYU president Stephen Wilwright, he makes no qualms about that. He makes no qualms about that. Now, there's a lot of people that have been working at BYU Hawaii, that born and raised in Laie, that have been let go with a lot of these things. And now you're seeing a lot, you know, a lot of my friends that were working there for a long time, their parents are being let go, and their jobs being replaced by somebody who came in from Utah or came in from California. And really, they don't plan to live here, but because they could afford, you know, to buy a vacation home, buy a home, and then so they'll rent it out for, you know, 6 months to a year. And so that's that transaction where actually now we're being pushed out of our own space to live now. And that's what I talk about when they hold you as an economic hostage. I don't work for HRI. I don't work for BYU Hawaii. I don't work for PCC. So they don't hold me as an economic hostage. They can't do that to me, right? They can try, but they can't. But that's why I can understand when a lot of my friends and family who do work for them, who go to school there, who are members of their church, can't speak out. Because there's a lot of implied pressure on that hey, we still own you, mm-hmm. and prevents them from speaking out like that.
We own you and your tongue.
Right.
So the question I have is, has in regards to affordable homes, have they given a specific, we know the size and the magnitude of this development, have they given a specific number of what percentage of those homes would be affordable, and what is the
well,
price?
Supposedly 50% of the homes are going to be market value homes, and those will be second homes for folks from Utah and the mainland United States. And then 50% are supposed to be quote-unquote affordable. About a week and a half ago, they had a meeting, I guess, in Laie and elaborated somewhat on that. They still haven't given very much in the way of details. And from what Josh just mentioned about economic hostage taking, they mentioned workforce housing as well. Well, what happens if you lose your job at the PCC?
Mm-hmm.
What happens if you lose your job at HRI? They haven't told us what happens there. Do you get kicked out of your house? That sounds mm-hmm. an awful lot like the plantation.
Well, actually, at the Laie Community Association, they did tell them they do lose their house.
so okay.
If they retire, they have to move, and they are supposedly going to have no equity built in this housing. You'd be paying $300,000 to $500,000 for, like, leasehold that you don't build equity in and have to buy a new house or another house, you know, when you retire, because you no longer will be working for them.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happens with, like, Makakilo, the developers, they say, oh, we'll do this and promise you everything. And then they didn't put in any affordable housing. They come in with these crocodile tears. Well, we can't really afford to do this, you know, after all. And so then it's gone, you know. And
yeah. Well, there you have another caller. Let me.
Should I hang up so you can get other callers?
Okay, you can if you like.
Or can I listen? And you
can listen. You can listen or go to the internet.
My radio doesn't work out here on this.
Oh, you didn't hear the other part?
I didn't hear the other part. So
but you can hear it.
I can hear what's going on now.
No, go to KWAI.
No, my radio doesn't pick it up.
No, I know, but you got to listen to me. I'm going to tell you how to do it. KWAI on the internet. KWAI1080AM.com.
Oh, okay, thanks.
And then, but if you can't get a call back or try it now, if you can get it, then you can listen there, or you can welcome to stay on.
Okay, great, thanks.
Caller, good morning. Thank you for calling. Go ahead with it.
Good morning, Carol. I'm Margaret from Oxio. Aloha, Josh and Tim.
Aloha, Tim.
Ohuku all my life.
Aloha, Margaret.
And thanks for having your show on.
Yes, thank you.
But I wanted to comment, living in Kahuku all my life, I remember when Laie and a lot of their members and residents, of course being friends and neighbors, were very good neighbors for the longest time, but I believe this is being abandoned by this project of being a good neighbor to a lot of their, towns that are their neighboring towns.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we look at PCC, they have a marketplace, they have wonderful things, but no housing for their employees all these years.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, threats of closing down a school if they don't raise enrollment and become more liquid and all of those kinds of things. They're not pretty neighborly things to be saying to our communities that surround them. And I believe that if they can't be good neighbors, you know, just like Hawaii Loa had to leave and HBU came along, then maybe some land swaps. If you're not going to keep the land in ag and help the communities that border you and are you, then if you can't keep it in ag and you need to urbanize it, then it's time for a land swap to Kapolei.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody, maybe a farmer in Kapolei or maybe the state would, or any of those other nonprofit farms,
mm-hmm.
could rely on some really good ag land to help Hawaii become more sustainable. Because this is talking about Bill 47, which is like 10 years old from being amended, and we're still going to not get it right with a project like this in our sustainable plan for Po'olau Loa. We are a rural community. We're going to remain rural because that's what the infrastructure is. There's families that have been here for generations. Some of my neighbors have left because of gentrification or just bad land use. But let's hope this 800 planned community just doesn't happen. I know people need homes, but it can't be on ag land, and it should have been started 20 years ago instead of having a theater built in PCC and now a marketplace built in PCC and more college dorms and more everything except for the residents who provide service to that organization.
Mm-hmm.
It's sad, and I stand with Councilmember Ikaika Anderson and hopefully our Councilmember Ernie Martin that this is not Pono, that this project should be eliminated.
Let me ask you, this the affordable homes and all of that, we don't know if maybe you know the numbers that they presented, but how are they able to build these homes, and then who's going to, where are they going to get salaries from other than working for that? Because are they saying this mall and all of this will bring in new jobs, or will it be manned by people affiliated with the church?
I think it's presumptuous.
Well, that's the devil in the details. They're at the early stages. This is just like number one on the list of planning, right? This is the our Ko'olau Loa sustainable plans that follow that sort of guide development. So this is number one. All the details will come after this in the rezoning and the land use commission appearances. So I think any details we haven't heard. We've heard workforce housing. We've heard 800 homes. But maybe the Tim and Josh would know more. But yeah, I mean,
mm-hmm. Now
it's like the bigger plan, right?
In today's article, I thought I may be mistaken. I read in that there was a mention that there was a certain number of acres or percentage of this land that was agricultural, was not food. Some reference that wasn't food productive ag land.
That's because.
I'm sitting here bleeding in my ears because it's scratching my head. What do you mean by that? I mean, a non food producing ag.
Yeah, no. We lived here as high school students in the 60s. Ralph Makayao and an engineer from Kauai, Joe Blevins, all worked summer jobs for the plantation, and we even had a farmer from Salinas come in on that very land at Mauai Kahana and grow melons, both cantaloupe, honeydews, and I think watermelons. I'm not sure why they left, but it was a really productive summer. But they were trying to diversify, have their, you know, the plantation was trying to look to diversifying farmland there. And they used that exact property, Mauai Kahana there, and
I just thought it was a narrow-minded thing.
Yes.
When you got all of the
obviously
new...
Obviously, they don't know the history of the land.
Or just know the...
Yeah, they call it non-food-bearing... Non-food-bearing ag 2 land.
Non-food-bearing.
Okay? No, no. Part of what my goal is, as a small... I want to grow breadfruit, okay?
Right.
What we call ulu. Now, on all of that land in Malaikahana, okay, one breadfruit tree can feed a family of four for the next 50 years. Mm-hmm. They tell me that piece of ag land is non-food-bearing. I'll plant 1,000 breadfruit trees right on top of that land, and we'll feed not just our entire island, but the entire islands of Hawaii.
Or,
tell me that's non-food-bearing.
Or on that side, you could do a mixture of green waste and produce... a soil condition that would relate to agriculture.
Kololo has always. We want to go back to really talking about feeding our people.
Right.
Kololoa in ancient Hawaii, in old Hawaii, right, was the breadbasket of Hawaii. It's why it was so important to people like King Kamehameha and all of the kings, because we in that land are so fertile, can feed the people, and it can sustain all of the people, and we just need to go back to that. What we got right now, focus on that.
Carol, right quick, before you go to the next caller, maybe, I just want to go back to something Margaret had said, and
okay,
just to speak real quickly on what Josh said, he's exactly right. It is the breadbasket of our island, and regardless of whether going cantaloupe or breadfruit or what have you, it's not growing subdivisions. That's what
right.
We know what we don't want to do is plant concrete. We mm-hmm. need to be growing food, especially in places that are already designated agricultural. But as to what Margaret said about the neighboring communities, you're looking at seven communities within Ko'olauloa. Of those communities, a full six of them, have taken positions against Envision La'ie, against development at Malaikahana, the Haula Community Association, the Ka'ava Community Association, the Kahana Community Association, Kavela Bay and Punalu'u Community Association, the Sunset Beach Community Association, and part of Kahuku, which is split because of some of the development interests. But Margaret's exactly right. Auntie Margaret mentioned our friends and neighbors who live in La'ie. That community is also split. However, the developer controls their association board. And so,
right.
Unfortunately, they've taken a position.
I'm also a member of the Ko'olauloa Hawaiian Civic Club. And the Association of Hawaiian Civic Club actually passed a resolution opposing Bill 47 and the development of Envision La'ie.
Mm-hmm. Caller, good morning. Thank you for calling. You got a comment, question?
Thank you, Carol. Aloha.
Yes.
Aloha, Auntie.
Aloha, Margaret.
Oh, hello, caller?
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. You know, whenever a developer says affordable housing, beware. Because that's mostly baloney. I remember when they did this development in Kailua. This was going to be workforce, affordable housing. And what they did is they tore down all that low-income housing that was left in Kailua, basically. And they have a sign up there. It says,
right.
Starting at $700,000 on up. You know, 700,000 on that, that's what they're...
Yeah. Well, the thing of affordable housing is it's the agencies that agree to this that troubles me, because, you know, you could agree to build 1,000 houses and then turn around and go back and negotiate with the director of DPP, and you could have it reduced to and say, well, instead of building 1,000 houses... why don't I just give you money that $500,000 or $2 million? And there are situations. I'm not representing the real facts, but giving an example here. Hold on. Caller, real quick. Go with your comment or question.
Thank you very much for taking my call. I had a friend from Chowchilla, California, Merced, who came here to Hawaii. He's a farmer, 2,000 acres cattle, agriculture, and said he could grow anything. About the area, geographic location that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is that thing about don't call me an elephant. When you say country, they frame the argument. When you say affordable housing, they frame the argument. All I can say is you got to fight. Thank you very much, Mr. Cox.
Thank you. All righty. Go ahead, Dave, and we got to get back to this. You have one more comment?
Oh, no. It's just a bunch of double speakers, any of these developers, you know, because they, well, like you folks were saying about their PR.
Yeah.
you know, and everything. I mean, they have the whole apparatus, right? I mean,
right.
This,
yep.
Out in Salt Lake City, and they know what they're doing. They're gonna even if it is affordable housing, it'll be a, like you said, a little tiny bit of it.
But I tell you what, Dave, you're absolutely right. They got the whole PR machine, but you know what? And all these people listening right now. There's nothing more powerful than one person standing up for his home, okay? So what we want you guys to do, if you feel that way, you can make a difference. Go on to the city testimony line. Go ahead and put in your testimony for City Planning Zoning Committee. Support Ikaika Anderson's amendments. You can go to honolulu.gov/council. What the issue is Bill 47. You want to go ahead and oppose Bill 47.
Support the amendments
of Kaika Anderson that eliminate Envision Light EA from this project.
And you can see some of the information at defendoahucoalition.org, right?
That's correct. And you can click on our testify button. It'll take you to a page. It's already all filled out. You can add comments,
right.
Take away, whatever you want to do. Just put in your information. It'll go to all the right people. It's going to go to Councilmember Anderson, who chairs the Zoning and Planning Committee, mm-hmm. Vice Chair Trevor Ozawa. Of that committee, as well as the chair of the city council and our council member in Ko'olauloa, Ernie Martin, who we're very hopeful is going to be supportive of not just these amendments, but also some additional language to the bill.
We love you, Ernie.
Good morning, caller. Go ahead with your comment real quick. Hello, caller.
Hello, good morning.
Yeah, go ahead with your comment. Thank you for calling.
Just sort of a comment reminder that what Bill 47 is regarding the Ko'olauloa Sustainable Community Plan. It is not the La'i'e Sustainable Community Plan. I'd like to thank Tim for pointing out that the Kahana, Ka'ava, Punalu, Haula, Kahuku, Kavela Bay, and Sunset Beach communities have all, you know, spoken out against the, you know, proposed Mailai Kahana. And so it's the whole, we have to think of it as the whole Ko'olauloa. And the second point or comment I'd like to make is I'd be real curious if there's any soil sciences, agricultural, or farming curriculum at BYUH. Being surrounded by thousands of acres of ag land that they owned, you'd think that the university would be supporting agriculture and farming more with its curriculum. Thank you very much.
Hey, thank you for calling. Caller, good morning. Go ahead with your comment or question.
Yeah, I'm sorry I missed the earlier part of your show. I'm just hoping that you're providing contact information for city council members for your listeners to express their concerns.
Well, he's sitting here right now with a list about the, going, can I?
Yes. I've actually got that information. So as Carol just mentioned, defendoahucoalition.org. And at that page, you can click to testify on Bill 47 to support Councilmember Anderson's amendments. Just fill in your information. It's take you about 30 seconds, I think. If you want to go directly to the council members, you can go to honolulu.gov/council. There you can find your council member. You can get their phone number, their email address. I've got Councilmember Anderson's address here. It's ianderson@honolulu.gov. His phone number 768-5003. The chair of the city council, Ernie Martin's address is emartin@honolulu.gov, and his direct line is 768-5002. So there's a lot of different ways you can get involved. Send in your testimony. It always really helps, I'm told at least, by folks that I know who work in government, that a phone call is very effective because when they get online with a constituent, that really gets their attention. So find out who your elected official is and call the city, because it's so important to make your voice heard right now. And as to that last caller who was talking about all the different neighboring community associations, mm-hmm. and neighborhood boards, mm-hmm. I just wanted to mention to him some of the neighborhood boards. Now, I spoke earlier about community associations. Some of the neighborhood boards that have taken positions against the proposed development at Mailai Kahana are the Kahalu'u Neighborhood Board, the Kailua Neighborhood Board, the Manoa Neighborhood Board, the Mililani Melemanu Waipio Neighborhood Board, the North Shore Neighborhood Board, and last week, the Makakilo Kapolē Neighborhood Board. So people get it. You know,
who,
I mean,
introduced this bill, may I ask? Who introduced this bill? Which 47, this year, time of the year? Who introduced it?
That's a good question. I think DPP is actually who put it on the agenda, who asked to have it put on the agenda. And so it goes through zoning right. and planning. So I would imagine Councilmember Anderson's office put it in, but I'm not sure.
Bill
exactly.
47.
Right. The original came out in 2009, like right. you said. Right. The developer and DPP changed it up. And
who brought it back to life?
Made it so controversial. And then in 2013, I believe, it was first proposed at council, and then it's sort of been on the back burner since then.
Caller, go ahead. We're going to close down.
Can I just provide a couple more key telephone numbers?
Right. Yeah, you get about a minute. Go ahead.
Okay,
help yourself.
The first three digits are the same on all these numbers. The first one I'm going to give would be 768-5822.
Mm-hmm.
That's the city clerk, and she can direct callers to the individual members of the Zoning and Planning Committee.
Okay.
Ikaika Anderson, his number is 768-5003. He is the chair of that committee.
Okay.
Trevor Ozawa, who is the vice chair of the Zoning and Planning Committee, his phone number is 768-5004. And you folks already mentioned Chair Martin. His is 768-5002.
Okay.
So 5002, 5003, 5004, and 5822 are all numbers that are useful.
Hey, thank you for joining in and providing that info.
Thank you for what you folks are doing. It's
all right.
A very, very serious issue. It needs close scrutiny.
Well, we'll do it again. We'll do it again soon. Okay.
Thank you.
Joshua, you have anything? We got about 1 minute.
What we want to do is go back. Aloha Aina no Ko Olau Loa, along with the Fena Wahu Coalition, our friends, farmers, community members. We're going to have a press conference on the front steps of City Hall Wednesday at noon, okay, where we're going to be supporting Councilmember Kaika Anderson amendments to eliminate Bill 47. And I want everybody to come on to City Hall the very next day on Thursday, 10 a.m. for the City Planning and Zoning Committee, where they can come out and testify and give their testimony in regards to helping both Tim and I and all of our friends out here in the country to keep the country country.
Just want to thank you as well, Mr. Cox, for having us on the air, and thank everybody for doing their part to ensure a sustainable future for our island home. Everybody's voice counts. And it's so important to make your voice heard at this critical time to keep the country country. DefendOahuCoalition.org.
Right, one last thing, you can find us on Facebook at Aloha Aina no Ko Olau Loa. Go ahead and like us on Facebook. Send us a message, and we'll make sure to get back to you guys. Mahalo.
Yeah, Andrea, you there?
Yeah.
Real quick, you have one closing comment? Real quick.
Of all the community associations that have made resolutions against us, they forgot Waihole Waikani, because we're all in this same road, you know?
That's right.
And they are affected as much as the rest of us by all the traffic impact that this will cause if they do this development.
Okay, well, we're going to try to put another show together and ask Mr. Anderson or whoever involved would like to participate. So thank you again for joining us, and this is the Carol Cox Show, and we'll see you next week, guys.
Aloha.
Aloha.
Hui ho.
Aloha. Save you.
This has been the Carol Cox Show, heard every Sundays at 9 a.m. on K108. Tune in again next week, Sunday at 9 a.m. to the Carol Cox Show on 1080 a.m. KWAI Honolulu.